Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
These other states and these other primaries, they are winnowing down the candidates. South Carolina picks presidents.
Sorry, Rick Perry. No one actually got winnowed in New Hampshire, as all the Republican primary candidates are now moving on to the much more politically complicated state of South Carolina. So with us now are Raihan Salam, who writes the agenda blog for National Review Online and writes for The Daily, that's Rupert Murdoch's iPad app, and David Woodard, Clemson University political science professor, who has also worked for South Carolina Senators Lindsey Graham and Jim DeMint, even wrote a book with DeMint, published in 2008 about free speech, called Why We Whisper. David, welcome, and Raihan, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
So, Raihan, for all the yelling and screaming about Romney liking to fire people and all the back and forth in the two weekend televised debates, New Hampshire voted about the same way they probably would have a week ago before Iowa, wouldn't you say?
That is absolutely right. Romney performed very well, and he also performed very well with self-identified Tea Party activists, with self-identified conservatives, who are only just a shade over 51% of the electorate in the New Hampshire primary.
How do you explain that?
Well, I think that it's electability. It's the sense that Mitt Romney is a much stronger candidate than he had been in 2008, and it's also a sense that he is the candidate best positioned to defeat President Obama. And that's something that a lot of Republicans, whether they're conservatives or whether they're somewhat less so, whether they're moderates, are really interested in.
David, I got the feeling that much of the campaigning done in New Hampshire this week was really for the benefit of your state, South Carolina, anyway, because New Hampshire results were never much in doubt. How engaged would you say Republicans in your state have already been?
Very engaged, and the conservatives down here aren't anything like they are in New Hampshire.
Explain.
Well, they're just much more conservative on social issues, and they're much larger. But we'll see. I mean, usually the race here is a race between a moderate and a conservative, with the conservative having the advantage.
Gingrich is now doubling down on this line of attack against Romney, which is not particularly conservative, that he was a greedy SOB at Bain Capital. He knows Romney won't engage in one of Newt's 90-minute debates that he's always challenging people to, so he's challenging him like this.
At some point, Governor Romney is going to have to hold a press conference and walk through with considerable detail some of the companies that Bain took over, where they apparently looted the companies, left people totally unemployed, and walked off with millions of dollars. Look, I'm for capitalism. I'm for people who go in to save a company. But if somebody comes in, takes all the money out of your company, and then leaves you bankrupt while they go off with millions, that's not traditional capitalism.
Raihan, before we get to the merits of the argument, just politically, do you think that the pressure that Gingrich is trying to put on Romney to have a news conference to answer a million Bain questions is actually going to happen?
I think that's hard to say. I know that Mitt Romney is going to have to talk about this a lot, and his campaign is going to have to talk about this a lot and articulate a more effective message on this question. And that's why I think Newt Gingrich has given Mitt Romney a tremendous gift. Another thing I'm going to throw out there is that Newt Gingrich might want to answer some questions about Forstmann Little, the private equity outfit where he served on the board and happily accepted compensation from an outfit that, again, does stuff that's very similar to try to turn around companies.
So what do you think, Raihan, about this divide now breaking out within the Republican Party, and I don't think it's too strong to call it a divide within the party, over whether to attack Romney for running Bain Capital Management, a private equity firm that sometimes made money by putting lots of people out of work when it closed or restructured companies?
Well, Mitt Romney, who is a famously friendly guy, referred to it as desperation in his speech in New Hampshire yesterday, and I think that is not an entirely unreasonable characterization. This is not the kind of argument that I imagine Gingrich's camp imagined they'd be making a few weeks ago, yet they're out there making it in full force, recognizing that it is actually very electorally potent. The question is it actually very potent with Republican voters? And, you know, that's going to be a mixed question because the Republican electorate is divided between college-educated Republicans and non-college-educated Republicans. The latter group has fared somewhat less well economically than the former group, and Mitt Romney's gains in New Hampshire arguably reflect the fact that he actually did much better with high-income voters in 2012 than he did the last time around. So when you think about the Republican Party being divided by a class divide, a subject that, you know, obviously a lot of Republicans are reluctant to talk about, but if you think about it that way, it seems as though Romney is consolidating that more affluent slice of the Republican Party, while the the non-affluent slice of the party is still up for grabs.
So, David Woodard, let's look at how this might play in South Carolina. If this is going to be the central line of attack, and we hear that Gingrich is going to spend more than $3 million or have his related super PAC independently, spend more than $3 million in South Carolina attacking Romney along these lines. So-called upstate South Carolina, along I-85, Spartanburg, Greenville, around there. Bob Jones University is there, so very socially conservative, but also a manufacturing hub. And Politico estimates today it has about 40% of the statewide vote. Is this the kind of area where the attacks against Romney on Bain could have an impact because there's a lot of unemployment in the manufacturing segment sector there?
Well, we'll have to wait and see. If what we see, the electorate is divided into upper income and lower income, well, we'll have to see. A lot of the lower income traditional Republicans are out of work here. We have the fourth highest unemployment rate in the country. But I think the interesting thing is that while Perry and Gingrich have taken this tack of attacking Romney, Santorum has not. And so if it is backfiring, then it may backfire to Santorum's benefit.
Santorum has not, although I think he's walking a line in a different kind of way. Like, he's defending private equity practices, but he's still saying he's the guy who blue-collar voters know is one of them, as opposed to Mitt Romney. Is that how you hear it, David?
That's right. But even more than that, he's talking social issues first, economic issues second.
So,
and I think that may be his most distinguishing trait.
Right. But is this a different kind of year in South Carolina? I mean, you frame the traditional split historically as being between the more socially conservative candidate on values issues and things like that and the more moderate. But in this year where economics is almost everything, and now we have this upper income, lower income class thing being inserted into it, does it play differently? Does it divide the South Carolina Republican primary electorate in a new kind of way?
It's a much larger social issue conservative electorate down here than any other place he's been. I really think this may be a secret weapon that may work to Santorum's advantage, because just hearing about economic issues from someone like Newt Gingrich doesn't reassure you, like having Santorum and his family and his values message come off first. I heard him Sunday night. The first thing he said off the bus was, "We have an economic crisis, but it's a byproduct of our cultural crisis." And when he began to talk about the cultural crisis, the loss of faith, family, and freedom, he got some applause in the room. So I think maybe he's speaking to the heart, Gingrich is speaking to the head, but we'll still have to see. This vulture capitalism thing that both Perry and Gingrich are using is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out in the next week.
Perry and Gingrich and Huntsman, and Santorum is and isn't in the way we just described. Ron Paul isn't in any way. Here's a clip of Ron Paul really defending Romney on this.
But I sort of have to chuckle when they describe you and me as being dangerous. That's one thing, they are telling the truth, because we are dangerous to the status quo of this country.
So, Raihan, you got to love Ron Paul. Here's the guy who came in second to Romney. Instead of piling on the number one issue that's being used against him to try to climb up that one next spot to the lead, he defends Romney because, well, this is a core belief of Ron Paul.
I mean, the guy has been out there saying the same basic things for about 25 years, and he's going to keep doing it as long as he can.
Is there a Ron Paul constituency in South Carolina, David?
Smaller, but very vocal. And one of the things that I think may be happening is by attacking capitalism, that may be helping Ron Paul. In polls here in 2008 and 2010, he never had more than 15% of the vote. If they keep up this rhetoric, it may get inflated up to 20.
All the way up to 20. Well, 20, 20 is kind of a lot.
20 is a player. There's no doubt about 20, it.
You know, Ross Perot got 20% in the general election. And, you know, arguably swayed it to Clinton in 1992. I guess there's dispute about where his votes actually came from. But, yeah, when you're 20% in any electorate, Raihan, you're a player.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And that's one reason why in the New Hampshire debates, Ron Paul attacked, attracted a lot of the attacks that one would think would have gone towards Romney, because the sense was that, hey, you know, Ron Paul is absorbing a lot of these conservative supporters, these mainstream conservative supporters who need to be reminded, according to the Gingrich and Santorum camps, of the fact that he's actually very heterodox.
Listeners, anything you want to say about the Republican primary race so far? Our phones are open, 212-433-WNYC. We'll open it for everybody today. We've done a few days of just taking Republican calls as this has approached the Republican vote in New Hampshire. Republicans still welcome, of course. Anyone else may call, 212-433-WNYC, with your thoughts, with your questions, 212-433-9692. Our first guest on this today, Raihan Salam, who writes the agenda blog for National Review Online and writes for The Daily, Rupert Murdoch's iPad app news organization, and David Woodard, Clemson University political science professor, who has also worked with South Carolina Senators Lindsey Graham and Jim DeMint. 212-433-WNYC, or keep the conversation going on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. How does this set up the fall campaign against Obama, in your opinion, Raihan, if it's Romney and if the Republicans keep going down this track? You know, political analyst Jeff Greenfield was on our New Hampshire coverage last night discussing this anti-Romney movie that Gingrich is touting. And he said the irony is that a conservative Supreme Court enabled unlimited conservative corporate PAC money with the Citizens United decision, and the first expensive campaign movie to come out of it could have been made by Michael Moore.
Oh, I think that's very astute, and it's something that people don't understand about campaign finance, I would argue. When you're looking at Gene McCarthy, Clean Gene, who launched an anti-war presidential challenge to a sitting president in 1916, LBJ, he was backed by a group of eccentric multimillionaires, and without them, he never would have been able to raise the money to really punch LBJ in the nose, and perhaps LBJ would have run for president in 1968. You oftentimes need these folks in order to launch campaigns, whether they're from the ideological left or the ideological right.
Gary in Queens has a National Review question for you, Raihan. Gary.
Hi, Brian. Well, I did wonder why National Review Online endorsed Romney, who's now getting the investment bank support this year as opposed to Obama. And also, why can't pundits do an analysis of what Republicans want? The primaries are supposed to measure the preferences of Republicans. So why don't you deduct the estimate of estimated Democratic votes that goes to a particular candidate, and also combine what's the combined, like for example, Santorum and Gingrich combined vote is not too shabby.
I think that's what's going on here. I don't think anybody's playing this against Obama too much right now. But Raihan?
No, but I think Gary raises a good point. And fortunately, there are a lot of newspapers who have looked at what was the opinion of the Democrats and independents in New Hampshire. And they found that really they were enthusiastic about John Huntsman. They were enthusiastic about Ron Paul. They were somewhat less enthusiastic about Mitt Romney. And if you combine Gingrich and Santorum, well, that's 9.4% for both of them. You combine them together, they're still not coming very close to Mitt Romney's vote total in the state. And when you look at self-identified conservatives, Mitt Romney also won a pretty resounding victory there.
Chris in Newark, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm a Republican. I've been a Republican for a long time, even though I'm a young guy. And I'm behind Mitt Romney in this election. I think that it's hypocritical, funny, that you have guys like Rick Perry, Newt Gingrich, coming out against Mitt Romney for running Bain Capital, which was a very successful private equity firm by all standards. If you look at the private equity industry, they're out there bashing him, saying 30% of the companies that he took over failed. That's above that's a good record for private equity. He's not a corporate raider like some of the other private equity firms. He went out there. He did what he had to do, took over companies that, if you look at their balance sheets, were probably going to fail anyway. Yes, some people have to get laid off in these situations. And I think that he's the best candidate to beat President Obama. And I just don't get this attack. Although I do agree with Rehan that I believe that it's going to sharpen his response to this attack, because we obviously know this is coming from the Democrats. I just don't think that guys like Gingrich and Will Perry maybe are this naive and stupid. Yeah. It sounds a little glib, but sorry.
Chris, the Wall Street Journal had a long editorial today taking exactly the position that you took, and to amplify one of your points. They said that Bain was a company that tended to take on riskier companies, companies that were, you know, small and more on the verge of failing, to try to restructure them and get them to profitability. So, of course, they were going to have a higher percentage fail rate, which includes loss of jobs, than even other private equity firms. But they do make the point that there are some questions to be asked about Romney and about Bain in cases where they took out a lot of profit for themselves, for Bain, while allowing companies to go down, and that he may have some questions to answer for there. Do you care about that?
Well, yeah, I do care about that, but I also understand how private equity works. So they take their investors' money and their money, and they do take on debt. It's part of the structure of a private equity firm, and they invest it in risky companies. And when you invest in risky companies, and the companies end up turning around and doing well, you make a lot of profit. Now, do they take fees for companies that even fail? Yes, of course, but that's the model. I mean, to go out there and say that he's a vulture and he's going in and just dissecting companies and letting them fail. It's ridiculous, really.
Chris, thank you very much. Keep calling us, okay? Thank you very much. David Woodard in South Carolina, let me change direction a little bit. What about Bob Jones University, which seems to come up every 4 years in primary season?
I'm the first one to bring it up.
Really? Well, and maybe I'll be the last this year. I don't know. But I'm just, you know, when everybody remembers, if they've been covering politics, that in 2000 there was an uproar after George W. Bush, as a candidate, campaigned at Bob Jones University, which right. still banned interracial dating at that time. Will right. candidates campaign there this time, and will it still be controversial because of the school segregation has passed?
It's changed its policy. I have the GOP tracker that shows where every candidate is in South Carolina today. None of them are at Bob Jones or even in the upstate. I think they're battling for the core of the vote, which is down in the low country south of Columbia. They have conceded social conservatives up here in the upstate, probably to Santorum or Perry or Gingrich. And so I see no venues for Bob Jones on this list, so I guess they're not coming.
It's interesting. And I know Bob Jones University apologized for its segregation as passed in 2008. I don't know how much that wipes the slate clean in terms of what the politicians feel comfortable with. But Jones, who was an evangelical, was also known as anti-Mormon and anti-Catholic. So not only there would go Romney and Huntsman, but Rick Santorum, who's Catholic. And beyond Bob Jones University, how much of a factor do you think this might be in the larger population in that part of South Carolina, where, you know, I think most people in my area believe Mormonism and evangelicism are pretty similar, rightly or wrongly believe that, Christian conservatism that share many of the same beliefs and attitudes. But many evangelicals don't even accept Mormons as Christians. So how much do you think that might hurt Romney and, for that matter, hurt Santorum as a Catholic in South Carolina?
I doubt if it will. It's the views you have are different than those in South Carolina, of course. But the point being, I think that Romney was vetted here in 2008. I think a lot of people got to know him then. I've tried to probe on this in polls. I see no pocket of resentment against him for any particular reason other than maybe his policies. What most of the press doesn't understand is that Santorum has been here 27 times, and he's tapped into a very powerful pro-life network that is statewide. And it is embracing him, even as a Catholic. They're mostly evangelicals, but nonetheless, they're embracing him for his positions and for his family. And I think they're sort of a secret weapon in this race.
What do you think, Raihan, about Romney and the Mormonism in South Carolina?
Well, I think that this talk has been around for as long as Mitt Romney has had presidential ambitions. In fact, when his father had presidential ambitions in the late 1960s, this talk was also around. And it seems not to have resonated quite as much this time. You mentioned Santorum as a Roman Catholic. He fared incredibly well with Iowa's evangelicals. So for whatever reason, it seems that as the composition of the larger population changes, you get a broader sense of who is in the in-group. So if you're a conservative Christian, then perhaps that sense of what the conservative Christian in-group is has to become larger as you have fewer conservative Christians in the larger electorate. That's part of what I think is happening.
James in Manalapan, you're on WNYC. Hi, James.
Hi, yes, I'll make it short. I just wanted to comment on, in the past month, it's a blatant attempt by mainstream media to ignore Ron Paul. In a two-hour debate, they might give him about 5 minutes of speaking time. Everybody else gets double or triple. And I just wanted to comment about how now that he's doing so well that they're going to be forced to start talking about him and some of his views. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. I think there's more and more talk about Paul. But Robert in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi. Robert, hi.
Hello, how are you? As a supporter of separating corporate money from politics, I would like to know where the Gingrich and Perry campaign stole their "We Are the 99% T-shirts. I don't recall seeing them at Zuccotti Park, and I'm joking around, but my reference to that is clearly corporate capitalism in relation to the carcass eating. You know, obviously that's a true message that I believe strongly, and it's funny that all of a sudden the Republicans, who are so dead against this, fighting hard and heavy, now all of a sudden you got two significant candidates all of a sudden embracing it. And I think this is a great opportunity for our whole country to take a good look at them and see what happens when these people are behind in the race and they're willing to change their position.
Robert, thank you very much. So there's somebody from the Occupy movement, and Raihan, you'll get the last word. Do you think this changes the nature of the debate if Romney is the nominee once we get to the general election?
Oh, I think people have been raring to go to talk about this for a very long time. From some of my friends who are on the left of center side of the spectrum, there's been talk about private equity for a long time. There's a book, I believe it's called The Selling of America, that had been published in 2010 that's now getting a new printing. It's all about bashing private equity, and I think that we're going to hear about this pretty much endlessly.
David Woodard, let me add one last word to you. What should we know up here in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut about South Carolina as we watch the next 10 days that we haven't talked about yet?
See which of the three conservative candidates, Santorum, Perry, or Gingrich, seems to rise to the front. Huckabee was the candidate in 2008. George W. Bush defined McCain as a moderate in 2000. We'll just see which of those conservatives emerges.
As the bells go off at Clemson University.
Thank you.
David Woodard, political science professor there, and Raihan Salam, who writes the Agenda blog for National Review Online and writes for The Daily, Rupert Murdoch's iPad app. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll go county by county with Dante Chinney next in New Hampshire. And listeners, go check out this very cool WNYC-produced national county-by-county politics map for the 2012 election. Go to our website, WNYC.org, because we're going to look at this and break down the counties with Dante Chinney. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, or just go right to our politics website. It's a freecountry.org.